guys. Phil, Dave, how are you doing?
How you doing, boys?
Very good. Yeah, very good.
Seems like ages,
doesn't
it? It
is, well, it is. Because through the magic of pre-recording, the listeners don't know this, but the last couple of episodes we've done over the period towards the start of this year, rather than you know, live as they might sound. So we've actually not sat and done this for a good month or two, possibly longer.
It's been a while, boys. It's been a while.
I know.
I miss you. I really miss you. But it's good to see you. What's really weird? There's somebody else here. We have a guest. It seems a while indeed, since guys. We've had a guest and who's joined Talking Cod. Dave, who's your mate?
Well, it's the three of us with a guest, which is awesome as well. Yeah, Mr. Jason Greystone, how you doing, buddy? All right, you
good? Thanks for having me. I'm not from your neck of the woods, but I do my most worst impression. I'm glad to be here. I was gonna put on me like Oasis, like, and have some like.
All right.
I was gonna like cut like yeah. I was gonna put on my trench coat, and like just go and. Put a hole in my door before I come through, but I'm all right, mate. You know what I mean?
You'd fit in really well there, bud. That would be standard ops, that. That would be class.
Yeah, I know.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Jason, you're a man of many voices. You're an impersonator, an impressionist, I guess, then.
I wouldn't say I'm an impersonist, but yeah, I try.
Just not for the day job, mate. Just not for the day job.
No. One day, you know, one day, maybe.
That's a career move.
It's Friday afternoon, and I get the feeling that I just feel free. It wouldn't be nice to always feel free. What's that word, is always free?
Always free, yeah. It is a feeling. So it came from back in the day... I was in a position, very fortunate position, where I didn't need to work, and all of my friends did work, and all of my family, you know, extended family and everyone did work, and whenever we would have a gathering or like make plans to have a party or meet up or go for dinner or whatever, my standard answer would be, "Oh, just let us know, I'm always free," and it was basically, it got to the point where everyone was like, What do you do? Like, are you some kind of drug dealer or what have you? And it just stuck. It just became this kind of this saying that I used to say, whenever I'm always free. And no one had to check with me about the time. It was always like checking with other people. And then I thought, what a great name for a podcast. But since I've kind of used it in commercially, if you like, it's become more of an affirmation. It's more of a, you know, a state of being, free from being told what to do, free from societal idealisms, free from people telling me how to spend my money, free, you know, financially free spiritually, and being always free, telling yourself that I am always free to make decisions to curate my own life, and no one needs to get in the way of that ever. And if they do, that is a signal that I'm not empowered in a certain area, or I need to figure some stuff out. And I think it's something I live by, you know, and it feels great. And it's a good name for a book and a podcast.
But take us back, Jason. Where does that notion, or where does life take you to the point where that first time you've said, well, someone's asked, you know, can we go out, go for a drink, or what have you? I'm always free. Where does that happen first for you?
I tell you what, it probably happened when I was a kid. Although I didn't say it as a kid, you know, I was one of those kids that were very happy in their own company. I'd lock myself in my bedroom and take the video player apart with a butter knife just to see how it worked and things like that. I would fill my time okay in my own company. I didn't need anyone else. I didn't really need friends. I didn't need, yeah, I was all right on my own. And I grew up on this estate in South London called Hatfield Mead, for anyone who's from that neck of the woods. And on a Friday night, we used to all sit at the foot of our block, like, and all the mothers' meeting used to take place, and everyone would kind of moan about the week and how their boss is greedy and, you know, rich people are greedy and all this kind of stuff. That was the kind of vibe on the estate. Mm-hmm. It was kind of, you know, attack the rich kind of thing. And I was about 13, and what fascinated me was this guy called Roy used to come down from the top flat above us, and he used to come down in the middle of that discussion with all the mums meeting and the people moaning, and he used to collect like a quid off everyone and go and do a syndicate lottery. And for the next 10 minutes, the conversation changed to like, and their face would light up with like how amazing their life would be if they won this thing. And I remember thinking, this is so weird. Like, what? Like, I didn't profess to have it all together because I was a 13-year-old annoying kid asking those questions. But I remember thinking, this is odd. You know, this is really weird. There's like a conflict. And coincidentally, that year, I wanted a Mongoose Sniper BMX for my 14th birthday. Yeah, it was a chrome BMX with a gyro.
Love it. Love it.
And handlebars.
There was a shop in Sutton called Pearson's it was a private shop, and they had one in stock. And I went there, got the brochure. I went down the video rental store, and they had a photocopier, and I photocopied loads of these bikes, and I pinned them all around our house as hints to my parents, like my mum and my stepdad.
So
I put them in the cupboard and under their pillow and everything on their ceiling. And in the end, my stepdad like said, look, we can't afford, it's 210 quid. We had no money. And he was like, we can't afford to buy the bike, but if you raise half, we'll pay for half. Like if you can somehow get the other half. And I thought, fair enough. You know, I was coming up for 14. I thought I'm old enough to do a paper round or whatever. And I ended up just choosing to wash some cars because in the middle of our estate there was like a triangular green and everyone parked around the green, and you know, I thought this would be easy, I'll just go and wash a car. So I went and knocked all the doors, and a lady called Lynn let me wash her white Volkswagen Golf sports, and it took me flipping ages to wash this car, but she paid me £5 and she gave me £2 tip. So that night I was in my room and I was telling my friend Lloyd all about it, going, you know, I'm gonna have the bike in no time. I'm going to go and wash another car tomorrow and the next day. And I think it was like the Easter holidays. And he offered to help. And I said, look, I don't really want to pay you. But my stepdad came in my room and he went, I'm going down to Safeway or whatever it was back then. Do you want me to pick you up anything? And something made me give him everything I'd earned that day, right? So that's quite a hard thing for a kid to do. You just earned £7 trying to get a bike and you just give it all away. And the reason I gave it to him was to get another bucket and sponge. And the next day,
love it,
we washed
love
four it. Cars. And within 4 weeks, I had four friends washing the cars and I wasn't washing the cars. I was knocking on the doors and getting the money and making the sales. And I remember persuading people that, you know, I was selling it to them, like, we're the only car wash with a squeegee, so we make sure all the drips are off your window. And I remember all these conversations with people. And it was amazing. And it was like I discovered fire. I remember like, it was like a 60,000 foot view on the estate going, this is why people must hate money. It's not that it's bad. It's just that they're using it the wrong way. Because if they used it like this, it frees you up to do more of the things that you enjoy and do less of the things that you don't enjoy. And I just remember thinking that was it was a massive turning point. And from that point on, I knew that whatever I wanted to do going into the world, I had to be comfortable with, one, my own decisions, because to give up money and then place a bet on myself, basically, that I was going to get more in the long run, that was a great choice. And then, and to serve, and my ability to use money the right way and invest money the right way. I knew that was something I wanted to do. So from that point, I was free to apply those lessons, and I've always been always free since that point, because I've always taken control of a situation that I don't feel like I've got my head around. So yeah, that's my short answer.
Wow, that was a short one. Wow,
it's a good answer, man. I love just it. Like Phil. I love it.
So first thing I picked up on there, Jason, is that you use the word use when it comes to money, not spend. And is that you know that helicopter view you're talking about? Like, it's a tool. That's all it is. It's
absolutely
not something I should chase. It's just a tool. And spend. And you learned that from what? The age of what? 14?
14, yeah. I do think I was lucky to there's an element of luck for me to be in that situation. I don't actually believe it's luck, because I think that what you think or perceive to be missing as a child, you tend to value most. So I grew up with bailiffs knocking on the door, and I remember a, you know, pitch black corridor. My mum was in the bath and she was a bit of a prude, so she wouldn't let me in. So I was scared looking down this corridor that looked like about a mile long, people knocking on the door. And I remember all that stuff. And, you know, my real dad had left before I was born, and then he got shot and stabbed, and, you know, he was a gangster, and he got moved to a secret location and all this crazy stuff. I was looked after by my babysitter, was a couple called Joey Pyle and Shirley Pyle, and they were like, Joey's like one of the most renowned gangsters in South London. He was Ronnie Cray's best man, and, you know, all these things, right? So what I valued was security. I grew up going, I want to get rid of that and never have that again. I want security. I want freedom. I want control. I want to know where my possessions are. I want to, you know, and that's along, you know, comes with its own challenges, particularly with, I hate losing things, for instance. You know, if I lose something, I have to buy it again. So it's back on my desk. I've got a real problem with that. Maybe over controlling with my kids and wanting to protect them and keep them safe, and maybe a overcompensation to protect for them or supply for them, provide for them so that they become a little bit wet. You know, maybe that's an issue, but that's what I valued most. And I think when you have that deep inner desire, that set of values that's been struck in you from age, you know, 0 to 7, they say that your character's developed. I think that does guide you to do whatever you need to do to fulfill your highest value. So whether that is influencing people on making money, like saying I'm the only person with a squeegee, you know, those kind of conversations come from somewhere. I know they say like, are entrepreneurs born or made? I just think that those things are forced out of us when we're desperately trying to move towards the opposite of what we don't want. So you focus on money, right? It's like law of attraction. You just focus on what you think will take you furthest away from where you don't want to be, and influential conversations, persuasion, you know, identifying people's behavior with money and trying to pick the right side of that, and all of that I think just come naturally to me because of what I perceived to be missing when I was a kid.
It's really interesting how you kind of look at what you wanted most when you were younger to kind of drive you towards what you do now, and I love that. Just want to bring Dave and Phil in a little bit now. I just want to give an example of that. I kind of think I had that when I was younger, but something happened which made me listen to everybody else and get a job. But when I left school, I set up a leaving do for a rival school. It's actually my wife's school. Well, we weren't married when we were at school, by the way. That doesn't sound quite right. She's now my wife. But when she was
older, you never know, do you?
Philip. She's now my wife, by the way. So she had a leaving do, and I've been doing some DJing. So I hired a DJ, I hired a room, and sold a load of tickets. I made hundreds as a kid. Like, this was the easiest gig I had. And I'm thinking, I should scale this, but I didn't know how to scale it. So I didn't know any entrepreneurs. So if I'd known you at this point, Jason, we could have been ruling the whole manor.
We could have been millionaires.
Billionaires, mate. So potentially, you know, so there's that. We've all had creative ideas, Phil. I know you're super creative, and Dave, you're entrepreneurial as well. What have you done in the past where you go, you know what, if I'd done that, I could be king lorded now?
Right. Well, I remember having a conversation with my best mate, Ash, back in the day in about 2000, oh God, early 2000s. And it was when the internet was blowing up and the conversations about streaming music, like the fact that at some point you were going to get music, you know, and it was going to come down the wire onto a device or what have you. That was like really nascent kind of stuff. I remember, and he pulls me up about it very often. And I said to him, one day, Ash, I'm kid you not, you know, all your music's going to come to you on a phone. And you'll just have some headphones with you and you'll plug them in or whatever, you know, and your music will be. And he's like, what are you fucking talking about?
Weird.
But he said, I tell you what, you should work out how that might happen because it sounds plausible. And I mean, I did set up an online online label not long after that, but I think it took a few years for the market to catch up. I mean, iTunes, I think, launched in 2004 or something like that. So it's kind of like, it was one of them. It was like, the idea was right. I'm not saying I came up with the idea at all, but it's just you see stuff happening and you put it all together. But like I say, Ash was just going, you know what? It sounds batty, that, but I think you're onto something.
So you were
go and find out what.
You were prophesizing iTunes and Spotify at the time, weren't you?
Yeah. And it, you know, it just seemed a natural progression of where the technology was. But I wish I was sort of motivated and resourced. The motivation, I think, was it then. I don't think I was motivated in the same way. Motivation and connection. Like if I had some batshit idea like that now, and I do have batshit ideas like that quite often, now I've got people to explore those kind of and the motivation to explore that kind of stuff in a bit more detail.
I like it.
I could have been a millionaire. Billionaire,
mate. Dave, you've been like self-employed since you was about three, haven't you?
Do you know what, mate? You're not. I think I've only really had one proper job, you know. But I don't think I've necessarily ever had one big insane idea. I think I've just, to the age that I am now, I've always been bootstrapping something, and some stuff's worked. And
what's a proper job?
Well, that's the thing. I genuinely believe that now a proper job to me was if I was working for somebody full time. I think I've passed that now. I'm unemployable, you know, to go and do that for somebody full time. But I've always been bootstrapping something, you know, along the way. And I've had times where I've had literally absolutely no cash whatsoever. And I've had times when I've had cash. I think the thing for me is not realizing in those early, this country brings people up in a certain way, doesn't it? Where the system is you go to school, you get a job, you get an house, you do this, you do that, you start a family. And from that, you put money into a pension and you work until the point of you're due to retire whenever that is, you know, from that. So you're constantly earning and earning. And the harder you work, the more stuff for a lot of people, the more stuff they want, don't they? Bigger house, more bedrooms, more holidays, bigger car and stuff like
bigger
that.
Bigger car.
I wish more I'd bikes, have known.
More guitars. more Wi-Fi lights.
I wish I'd have known what I know now earlier. And that's what I'm trying to do with my two boys, which is to basically educate them slightly differently, you know. So rather than earning your money and spending it, maybe squirrel a little bit somewhere that can earn you some money and then you can spend that instead, you know. And so looking at it differently. And when you get to midlife, like many of the conversations that we've had on here, shit changes and what you value changes. And it's not just then again about money. The greatest thing for me that I have at the moment is time. You know, I have time. I get time to do shit that I want to do. I've not got a 9 to 5. I've got flexibility. It's not money anymore that's the most valuable thing to me. Time's the most valuable thing. And then I put that with health as well. I put health with that, you know, and because I could be a billionaire, but if I'm told, mate, I've got 2 days to live, I can't just liquidate those billions and fix yeah. it. I'm going. Do you know what I mean? And I'm going. And also, I think the realization for me was my dad, you know, who worked all the hours to the point that he could retire and came to retire, became ill and passed away. And I was like, I ain't doing that shit. That is not for me. I am not being governed by that system itself. So I just bootstrap stuff all the time. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know, but no one big grand idea for me.
Just thinking about, you know, we a lot of us have ideas, but some people execute them. Obviously, Jason, you're the one who actually does stuff about it, and that's really important. Something you touched on there, if you talk about relationship with, you know, with family and your boys as well. Jason, I believe you've got teenage boys, and you kind of took the step to actually educate them properly, the kind of stuff you don't get taught at school. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, got two sons. One's just turned 16 and one will be 19 next month.
Good luck.
And the 19-year-old was the reason I got into all of this. I won't say he got me into it, but he definitely put a rocket up my backside because I wasn't ready to have a kid, and I found out I was having one, and now it was time to speed up that little plan of freedom. Imagine how scared I was when I was desperately trying to never ever have that situation for my own kids when I had them, and then I find out I'm having one and I'm only 22 I'm not ready. Like I'm now failing as a dad because now I'm going to give them a lack of security. That was tough. Yeah. It took me like 6 months to get my head around even what my life would look like, and I couldn't talk about it, and it must have been very hard for my wife, but I didn't want to talk about the pregnancy. I didn't want to talk about it. So I spent a long time just getting my head around it. I'm quite a logical person, so I just said, look, just give me 6 months. I'll really visualize what this is going to look like, what I need to do, what, you know, I want to make sure that I do the best. And by the time he came, I felt like I was not, you know, I didn't have it all sussed out, but I felt ready. I felt like I was right, let's do it. And I don't think enough people do give, they live off of fantasies or unrealistic expectations. They don't actually do the math. They don't do the numbers. They don't actually sit there and see how like it will embody their life or be part, like be real. And they do it with, you know, what, when they meet someone. As a new girlfriend or boyfriend, you know, they have this idea that they're going to be this amazing person that's never challenging and never, you know, and when you go into something like that, you're going to get surprised because everyone's got everything, you know, everyone's an arsehole, and everyone's a great person. Like there's all these sides to everything. So I try not to have fantasies or just like hope that it will be all right. I try and visualize and ground myself as much as I can on what it's going to look like. And then that at least gives me a good starting point. And then as I've gone through, I've constantly developed myself and tried to pass that down to my kids and really just teach them how to deal with their own issues rather than give them handouts and go, I'm going to chase and chase and chase and sacrifice my life so I can provide for your kids and their kids and their kids' kids. I don't give a crap about their kids' kids. Like I'm never going to see them. Like that's not my responsibility to provide for that. Yeah. What I want to do is actually teach them to be decent kids so that then they can go and build all that if they want to. I don't want them to look up to me or follow my footsteps. That'd be crazy. They've got their own personalities in life. So, you know, it's a tough one being a parent, but it's, I definitely knew that after putting so much, resources into my own personal development, I know that the schooling system wasn't quite right. And I always knew that if they ever challenged the schooling system, as in my kids challenged it and they weren't getting, they didn't feel that they were benefiting from it, I knew that I had to be ready to say, well, I needed to have a plan B because I wasn't going to turn around to them and say, well, I know you don't like school, but everyone has to go through school, because I didn't believe that, because I did terrible at school, right? So I couldn't have that reply. So I knew that I had to actually have a real plan B if they ever didn't fancy it. And And I did. So again, a big reason for driving me was to be in a position where I could guide my kids into something that they were inspired to do and then push them a little bit harder in that direction rather than just let them spend 6.5 hours a day at school doing general knowledge with maybe a couple of things that they enjoy. I'd rather let them do more of what they actually love with the hope that they'll just naturally become the best at that and earn more money doing that. And, you know, most importantly, be happy in their vocation rather than flipping, you know, going to work for the man every day. Yeah. That's not what I wanted.
Yeah. What really sort of struck or what hit with me was going back to that thing of security, so that the experiences in early life had motivated you. And the motivator really was, I don't want to see that. I don't want the lack of security that I had as a kid in my later life. Now, that completely resonates with me, but I guess we talked about this before. My dad was a truck driver, and my dad lost his driving license because he was too honest. He had a little fainting incident, not at the wheel of a truck, obviously, but in a transport calf. And his HGV license was up for renewal. And my dad, being the honest man that he is, felt compelled to say, and you do it all in good faith, you know. And then a couple of weeks later, he was told that his HGV license was being withdrawn. Now, my dad, all he'd ever done was work on the railways and then working on driving a truck. It's that same your dad thing, isn't it, Dave?
My dad did as well.
What happened there was really, like, really fucking pivotal. I have to reflect on this a lot, because when I was sort of 13, 14, my dad lost his license and lost his job. And I remember there was never a conversation. So we had a great family, no difficulties at all in that respect, but we'd never talked about stuff. And we specifically didn't talk when my dad lost his HGV license. So my fear, my mortal fear, grew from that very blooming moment where it was like, shit, like, what happens if my dad's not got a job? Like, what? So I catastrophize a lot.
True.
And I trace it back to that. So the thing for security for me, Jason, is that indelible kind of mark that he put in my head was almost like, again, was motivated towards security, but at the expense of any risk that would change my situation. So I work for myself again now. I have worked for the man or the woman. But that whole thing there of kind of when I've had a salaried job, the my inability to take any risk and go, you know what, I should get out and do something myself, completely went because of that one thing, that drive towards security. So it's almost like it's really refreshing to see that in your situation was a motivator to take a few risks or build stuff rather than mine, which has always been to lock stuff down and be very linear.
I think there's, you know, you could take either side, right? So I could quite easily have listened to those parents around the estate saying money's bad, and I could have accepted money's bad, and I could have gone out with that attitude as money's bad, and that could have been quite easy to do. I didn't have a father figure till I was about 6 or 7, and maybe that and the fact that I was then trying to figure stuff out myself, maybe that pushed me on that path a little bit more, whereas you had your dad, and then later in life you saw him lose his job, and then that kind of made you go, oh crap, you know, I better do the opposite of or maybe I better do what he had but do it better, like I better get a job but make sure it's secure and safe and all this kind of thing
and stick with it, and you know, yeah.
Exactly that. one thing I do, you know, I do practice a lot, and I've tried to practice all my life, is seeing things for what, like seeing the good and the bad and in everything as quickly as possible. So like you said that your dad lost the job, for instance, I'm sure like he was all right after a while, you know, and I'm sure that him losing that job was probably a good thing to happen in some way. If you ask someone, you ask his wife or you, or I'm sure you'll have some good qualities that came out of that event taking place, no doubt. The interesting thing is about the job, it's funny how you see the job as being less risky, because I see a job as being risky because the consequences is the consequences is not doing the things that you truly want to do. And it's great if you can get a job that you love, right? But most people don't go into a job they love. They don't even go into an area of a job they love. They go into something that's just high paying. And I've lost track of the amount of high paying people that come to me and go, I don't want to earn any more money. I just want more time because I've capped out at about 150 grand and I don't want any more responsibility. I can't take any more pressure from this job. I just want to go, like, I'd rather have 60 grand and have the and do stuff that I want to do. So
and get taxed a lot less.
Being able to see that. Trying to be able to see that early on. Again, it all comes down to not having this fantasy with something, not having an infatuation with an idea of what your life might look like. Actually just run some numbers, like go to the future a little bit and what does your life look like at that point?
Can I ask you about that, Jason?
Sure.
Because you sound like a man with a plan. It's like you've always had a plan. You're always planning for something. So there's a couple of things here. It's like you also mentioned like being financially free or being free as a feeling. So financially free, is that a plan or is it just a mindset? So for example, okay, 150K, I'm financially free. Or actually, I can just go and order off Just Eat if I want to anytime. So I'm already financially free. You know, so what? How does that work out? Is it different for different people, or how do you describe that freedom?
Yeah, so I did have a plan at 22. I put this plan together on Microsoft Money, which was a program, which is basically a dressed up spreadsheet. And the idea was I had a definition between what financial independence was and what financial freedom was. Financial independence was defined as a state that you get to where you can cover the lifestyle costs for you and your loved ones, the experiences that you actually want and need for you and your loved ones, regardless of a parent, partner, boss, spouse, guardian, or a geographical location. So for me, that was a very binary definition of what financial independence meant, right? So it didn't mean that I didn't have to work. It just meant I could control my income and I could cover it through semi-leveraged income streams because I was mobile and I could do it from anywhere in the world. And that was a point that I wanted to get to cover my lifestyle. That is, as I say, a binary thing. There's people who listen to this who could say, yep, that's me, or no, that's not me. Financial freedom is being able to maintain that income regardless of you. So regardless of me. So I could lose my mind and still generate that income. I could, the market could crash. Yeah, I could lose my motor skills and still generate that income. And that is financial freedom. And that is a scaling in thing that will depend on how far you want to scale your lifestyle and what experiences you want to scale to. So that's like a kind of a never ending chase, if you like. Mm. You can keep working on that. So that was it. And I had numbers to work to, and I said, right, this is my independence number and this is my freedom number. And although the freedom number might grow in the future, this is it at the moment. And that's essentially where I got to when I was 29. I had enough coming in without, you know, needing me that I could provide for that particular lifestyle that I had at that particular time. That.
That's a really good answer. It's very specific, and I like how you've done that. Did you? You probably don't have time to watch TV. In fact, you've got loads of time to watch TV. You probably don't watch it because you're sensible. But are you familiar with How to Get Rich by Ramit Sethi?
How to Get Rich. Yes, I have actually. Yeah, yeah.
What you said there reminded me of that. Very few people actually have a plan. They'll just go about doing things because yeah. that's what other people do. And then they complain when they haven't got any money. And he just literally said, you know, and your description of financial independence, it sounds like that's what he was working with them. It's like, so what is your rich look like? Yeah, I just want to be able to do this. I want to go camping every month. I want to see my friends once a month. I want to go for a meal twice a week. That's the thing. How much does that cost? Well, nobody's ever asked me that. How could you not plan for the stuff like the things you need? Seems like a very logical question, but so few people actually go beyond, I'll get a job and then I'll buy shit.
Yeah. And then just hope that I get rich one day.
It's not a plan.
No, I mean, I went to a seminar once and saw a guy, I must have been 24, I saw a guy write on a flip chart and he said, look, how many people in this room? There's about 80 or 90 people in this room. And he said, does anyone know what the average life expectancy is of people in this country? And they were like, no. And he just wrote 77 on the board. Mm. And was like, right. And then he said, does anyone know what their retirement age is? And they were like, 65. And he wrote that on the board. And then he wrote 75 divided, take away 65, 12. And then he said, does anyone know the average pension pot in this country? And at the time, it was about 87 grand. And he divided that up and he said, at retirement age, when you should be living your best life, you know, not after putting in all that work in the force for 45 years, you are going to have £600 a month, right? And you know, no one had ever thought about, you know, what it would cost. You're
surviving off that, are you?
You're going to be eating hot dogs off of that.
You're not surviving off that.
No. And that is the harsh reality. People just don't do the numbers and they just hope, oh yeah, but it'll be all right, cause I'll just get rich one day. And getting rich is quite hard.
I've always looked at it in a way that if I can no longer work and earn money from work, how long can I possibly stand still for until I need to sort of like get that revenue coming in again?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, so I've like a slight mix as well. So you could be revenue from your wage or revenue from other sort of things as well, or some assets that if you needed to liquidate it to get cash in, you could actually, you know, you could liquidate it to get that cash in as well. But also policies, do you know what I mean? Things are insuring certain things. So like, yeah, 100%. I get the pension 100%. And that I could talk to you about that, mate, for hours on end on theories on pensions and stuff like that. And the investor, because it interests me. It really interests me as well. But having other things in place, like a lot of people won't necessarily realize, you know, have an income protection policy in place. A lot of people, which blows my mind, don't have life and critical illness cover in place and things like that. And then they don't, and then God forbid, you know, you work for yourself, you can be, you know, even within a limited company, you can be exposed, but ring fencing certain things in a certain way that can't be touched. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, it's until the shit hits the fan with somebody that you know, or something happens to somebody, or for yourself, at the age that we're at, that people start to look at that. And again, my eldest, Joshua, he I speak about him quite a bit on here, he moved out. So he finished school and moved out, and he started earning a wage. And the first thing I said to him, I says, I don't care how much it is, whether it's £5, £10, £50, whatever that amount is, please put something away every single month and get into the habit of just putting a little bit of something away, because then you see it grow. And when it grows and it gets into a certain size, it's like, okay, all right, I get this now. And it's the habit, and it's not taught.
Yeah, it's,
you know,
the habit.
The kids aren't taught this. Nick, when Nick came on, we'll have to hook you up with Nick. Nick Thompson, what a guy.
Shout out to Nick Thompson.
It's not taught in schools. Kids aren't educated in this process. And for a lot of families, a lot of families are grafting the nuts off to exist and survive and provide the kids with maybe a holiday once a year or the latest football boots and things like that. It's the last conversation that they're going to have with the kid. It's not there and it needs to change.
Totally. And I think in school, you know, if you're going to really attack the root cause problem, is this whole conversation that we're having right now is about wanting to retire from your job. Now, I don't know about you guys, but you're always going to want to be up to something for as long as you've got some energy in you, right?
So, the real conversation
needs to take place in school is helping them and guide them on understanding what they are here to do, like what their purpose is, and build a vocation around that, because then you won't ever want to escape it. When I was talking about financial independence and financial freedom, financial independence is there for a feeling so that you feel free, but the financial freedom bit is only there should you want to stop working or have to stop working because you've broken your legs. But if you don't break your legs, you shouldn't want to stop. And if you do want to stop, you're doing the wrong thing. Right. Yeah, and that is it. So if you just did what you loved and built a vocation around what you love, it doesn't matter if you've got a 9-to-5. It doesn't matter if you've built a massive corporation of your own. You'll be happy or you'll be happier because it's something that you're enjoying. And I know that. That's a whole episode in itself. But that is the root problem. You know, that's the problem. Escapism is the problem.
Yeah. Definitely talking my language now. So I've done a lot of coaching recently about purpose, and I've actually rebranded myself purpose coach, because literally every coaching conversation we have now is about purpose. Why do you do it? Why is that important to you? Why do you do it?
It's the most important thing.
Absolutely, 100%. And you know, talk about ikigai. You know what you're good at, what you enjoy doing, and this, and you know what you believe the world needs, but also what can you get paid for? Now we kind of rephrase that as like, instead of what can you get paid for, as in a job. How do you get rewarded for doing what you love?
Yeah.
Therefore, you'll never need to retire if you find that.
Yeah. How do you live the life that you want doing what you love doing? That's it. Like, how do you just, it doesn't even necessarily mean being directly paid. It means like, if I love going to a gym and someone I serve owns a gym and they just let me use the gym because I've helped them out, well then great. That's a free life hack, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. There's something we were speaking before about, or a few things, and we'll probably have to get onto this pretty quick before we finish the podcast. We're talking about less, you know, you said like this, less to life. What do you mean by that?
I guess it's kind of what Dave said when it, just now, it's about really he mentioned that it's about health and it's about focus on time and things like that. When you get to your 40s, you realize, or if you've played the game half right, you should be nearly at a place where you're enjoying what you're doing. And when you're enjoying what you're doing, you realize that, you know, in my 30s, I used to chase and think that I'm working towards this end payoff, this easy payoff. But in actual fact, in your 40s, you realize it's actually living it that's the great thing, and seeing and the challenges that come up, and you want to get your hands dirty. And the more free you become, you also realize that with every loss of dependency, there's a new dependency. So like, my wife hasn't had to work, and she's found her fulfillment in looking after our boys and looking after the home, and she's never had to work. Now our boys are a bit older, she actually wants to go and get a job. So imagine, like, again, it goes back to like visualizing the future and not having this fantasy about what your life would look like sitting on a beach drinking cocktails. It's like, well, my wife doesn't have to work, but now she wants to. So if you tell that to someone who just couldn't fathom that, they'd be like, why would you want to work? Right. And if you won the lottery, why would you work? You know, first of all, that's a whole conversation. You know, people that do the lottery, they wouldn't be able to fathom that anyway. But what I'm getting at here is when you go into your 40s, you realize life the enjoyment and zest of life is actually just the day to day. You're never going to get to perfection ever. And you just appreciate that and love it. And if I live this day for the rest of my life or my life now, I'm chuffed.
I love that.
You know, I haven't got any,
absolutely,
haven't got any massive aspirations. I'm happy now. And that's it. And there is less to life. So like when I'm around the table with people in Dubai, like I got asked recently, why don't you move to Dubai? You don't have to pay tax. And I said, because I'd rather pay more tax than live in Dubai. Like I don't want to, I wake up and there's deer in my garden. I don't want to be in a desert. Like I don't like the people in Dubai. So, you know, it's just like, there's less to life. You know, there's less to life. It's about less is more.
I love
what a tangent.
It's a great one. So why don't you write a book about it?
I came up with a concept the other day and I think I'm going to.
So you're writing a book already?
Only because I'm hearing a lot of people say the same thing. I'm hearing this, you know. A lot of people are taking stock recently and going, do you know what? It's not really about that.
Do you think that's a sort of post-pandemic thing? I think we all got a bit of a jolt in that, didn't we? About what was important.
Definitely.
Like during COVID, I was exiting my last salary job and, you know, it really, everything clicked into place for me about my purpose at that point, priorities around the family and all that kind of stuff. But the way I wanted to work and the kind of people I wanted to work with and the kind of work I really enjoyed and, you know, that now is, that's completely stuck with me. I think, again, I was having this chat with Andy before the call. My stuff is very transactional. It's like, I'm doing this piece of work and it's going to cost X, you know, and I'm doing work I love. So
priorities.
That one is ticked every time.
Yeah.
But I've sort of started to get to think about a bit more about one, charging more.
Yeah.
Sorry if there are any clients listening, but, you know, thinking about how my work goes beyond sort of transaction based, or how I generate income in a way that isn't just transaction based, you know, and that's, but I think the whole thing for me, for the COVID, the post pandemic thing was, it really, I don't know, it was a very good timing for a very, very bad thing to happen. You know,
that's it. I think that's a wise approach. Obviously, less transactional, stop exchanging time for money and all that kind of stuff. The more mobile you are, the more free you feel. And that's why a lot of people loved COVID, because it was, they were free. They experienced financial independence to a degree. They could do whatever they want. They could structure their day in a way that they wanted to do it. And they had passive income in furlough checks and, you know, they rationalized their living costs because they didn't have to keep up with the Joneses and there was no one to show off with. So they experienced actual freedom. And a lot of people, the conversations that I have with people, that was when they said that I would happily accept less money and be able to do this because
do more of this.
Because I feel freer. So I totally get that. But the I mean, we can go on about this all the time, but I think that's the key. It's understanding. I think what I'm getting at is, like, a lot of people have this view where, if I could just get a million, or someone could just give me a load, or if I could just have a windfall. Well, Richard Branson's thinking like that as well, because he's trying to launch space shuttles. So he's now going, I wish I had more money, you know, so I could, I wish these investors would give me more money. It never ends. So think about this.
Yes.
If you had enough money to solve today's problem, do you think you'd solve it? You probably wouldn't. Or you'd solve today's one, there'd be another one tomorrow. Good and point. Actually figuring out how to get it solved yourself, that is the key. That's the beauty, not the, I wish someone would just give me a million, because you'd just be a wet blanket. You wouldn't do what you need to do with the money. It's not real.
Yes. Yeah, so money's not the issue, is it? There's other things there.
Money's not the issue. No.
So, Jason, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I could talk with you all day, but I can't. We can't do that. But so I think
we'll do another episode.
Yeah. Is that a promise?
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Let's do it. Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Get us on your podcast as well. That'd be real cool.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So What I think we could do is move into the quick fire round. So our regular listener will know what this quick fire round is all about, Phil. What that means is, do you need to explain it again? Are we all right?
I'm not saying no.
You just did. You just did.
Everyone knows how to quick fire round.
Right.
I'm
shaking up the quick fire round a little bit.
They don't want to know. They don't want to know. They already
stop
know
talking. Quick fire less is more now. Stop it. Quick fire question. My question for you, Jason, is a really good question, right? So I know that you invest, and I don't just mean investing in the markets. I mean, you invest, you know, you invest your assets, your time, you know, you everything you invest. I'm completely on board with that, but I haven't got a clue how to do it properly. So here's my quick question. Right. I want to get a camper van, but I want to get a camper van that I can rent out. Is that a good or a bad idea?
Oh, do you know what? That is a great idea. I want a camper van as well.
That'll do.
But you can hire it out to him.
You're not called Jason, you're called Phil.
I want a Bilbo. Yeah. I've got a place near me called Bilbo's, and I've gone in there multiple times to put my name down for one.
Oh, really?
And I just haven't pulled the trigger yet.
Yeah. I like it.
I'm going to one day.
So if I get a camper van, I can rent it out, and the money I get from that camper van, I can buy another camper van. And I have a choice of camper vans, and I'll let you borrow it for free.
Thanks, mate.
Oh, you're welcome. You can hold me to that. Phil, Dave, who's going next?
I'll go next. My mate has the domain campervanhire.com or something like that, and he makes fortunes out of it. Just, yeah, anyway. Quick fire question. Jason, if you could offer someone at the age of 16 some advice around their finances, first job or whatever, what would it be?
First of all, the first one would have to be, you're not going to earn what you want to earn for at least 10 years. But second of all, never charge money for your time, just charge for results. So, never exchange time for money. That's the worst habit you can get into.
The
best thing you can do is realize that there is going to be problems and pain points that you can solve for someone. And the bigger the problem or the pain point for that person, the more that you can charge. And you can charge it, but only get paid when you get them the result. And I think what that does, it puts a focus on kids actually wanting to serve and actually picking the right people that they want to work with and actually putting the work ethic in to see something through to completion, because kids have got, like, they think they're going to get things in 5 seconds. And I think there's not enough emphasis on completing something and seeing a project through. And that's when you get paid and that's when you get rewarded. That's going to be a much better lesson than any kind of go and get £20 an hour because you got a C in that GCSE or, you know, all that rubbish.
That's a great lesson.
So that's what I taught my kids, and I think that's and then invest 10% of or save and invest 10% of everything you
love it
10%
you earn.
It's the richest man.
And ideally 10%. So the way that I'd structure it is like 10%. You've got a body, a mind, and a soul. And your soul is being in this place of freedom to do whatever it is that you want to do that inspires you. You want an account just to save money for your soul. That's your financial freedom account. In your mind account, you want to put an allocation into that so that you learn and grow your income. So it spirals back around. And then in your body, which is your living costs, control that so that you live within those means and don't try and buy things because someone else has got it and you want to show off your Gucci bag or whatever. Just buy things that are meaningful to you, and that's it.
That's amazing. Very that's a good. Great question. Very I've learned a lot from that. Dave, your turn.
So a lot of the things we've spoken about today and the way that people behave is a result of, I guess, the overall system, whether that's education or government or you know, whatever that is. But people, my understanding and the conversation that we're talking, you know, we picked up on today is people are starting to go, that's not for me. And they are looking to make that change. Do you think that in the next 5 to 10 years, there'll be enough people making that change that system will be forced to change? Or do you think it'll just try to govern us continuously?
I think the opportunities will be abundant, but I still think human beings are human beings and they will still have the fear of going against the masses. And that's just something that we have in us, right? We just, there's a saying that the people with the most confidence and conviction in their message command the rules for society. And you see that in presidential elections for certain. Yeah, and you see it in, you know, really, whoever seems to have a bit of swagger and confidence, they're the ones that get the vote, because the masses just want direction from someone who seems sure enough about something. That's why Trump was elected. And that's why, you know, he didn't get the most, he doesn't have the biggest following, but he kind of put it out hardest on social media and things like that. So when that's what it boils down to, it's difficult to say that we will shift. But hopefully, as I mean, there's a big identity crisis going on at the moment, right? And here's my belief on that. I think that people are creating their new identities because they don't want to be compared to someone else. So with the pressures of social media and all of that kind of stuff, instead of going, well, I'm not as good as that person, or I'm not as good as that person, they're going, I'm not any of them people because I'm my own identity. Mm. Therefore I cannot be compared. So I'm now this, you know, and that's now got to take its own spiral. And it'd be interesting, with every trough comes a peak. And I think out of the end of that, I think people will be certain who they are. I think people will be more certain about who they are, and I hope that contributes towards people making better choices in their career and things like that. And the opportunities will be there for sure, because we've never lived in a world where it's like YouTube. I mean, that's a phenomenal platform. So yeah, I don't know. I think that's, it'd be interesting for sure, but I don't, human psychology doesn't change very quickly. You know, we haven't really changed much for like 3,000 years. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Great answers. Have you got any questions for us, Jason?
What gets you guys up out of bed in the morning? You know, what would you do on Monday if you didn't have to ever worry about money or work? What would you choose to do?
Who's going first?
I would pick that guitar up. I'd be picking that guitar up, and I'd be
playing Wonderwall.
No, right, all right. Let's just. I'm not.
Is that your answer?
Mr. Cod is the Oasis fan, and I'm not. I would. Yeah, I would like immerse myself in music again, and I am trying to immerse myself in music again. Because I know that's where, like, my ultimate fulfillment, apart from looking after my daughter, but the ultimate fulfillment comes from doing stuff with music, basically.
Amazing.
Dave, are you next on me?
That's what I'd do.
I'll go if you want, boys. I'll go if you want. And this might sound a bit, what does Phil coin the term? I don't know what your term is, Phil, that you use.
Yeah.
And I'm not, this isn't bullshit, guys. I'd like to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm quite happy with where I am. I'm quite happy with the space I'm in. Do you know what I mean? I think if I got all that, if all of a sudden it'd be like all that cash, I think I'd put some towards maybe a couple of ideas that we've got, invest it into that to move that on a little bit further and stuff like that. But I wouldn't want to change my life significantly because I'm quite happy, you know. I feel all right, and I'm not, and I don't want to. Do you know what I mean? And like anybody, good days, fucking bad days, whatever. Let's have it. But picking up on your point before, I'm quite good at being in the day. You know what I mean? So I don't know, you know, if it was there, it was there. It's sitting in a bank account for quite a while, I would imagine. Give some of it away. I don't know.
Can't believe that. I knew I should have gone before you. It's like Family Fortunes then.
I might go to gym. Well, I might train a little bit more in some mad locations or something.
You're still doing it. That, you're still saying the words that, I'm going to say. Yeah, you are going to. It goes back to something we said before. We've only got today, so there's very little point having a different plan every day. Just, you know, enjoy this day. So when I get out of bed in the morning, I just think, how can I serve people? And what I mean by that is not being subservient to people. I mean, how can I help someone? So my mission every day is to...
How can you be useful?
Love it.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, but that's why we're alive in the first place. That's the meaning of life, isn't it? That's the purpose of life, is to be of service. But for me, that's more specifically having impactful conversations. And I do that pretty much every day anyway. So I do that and I'm doing what I want to do. But I jokingly say, when I grow up, I want to be an athlete and I'm still working at it. So similar to yourself, Dave, I want to train and do something every day. My ankle's fucked. Kind of damaged it last week and it's really annoying me. So
welcome to middle age, mate.
Stop it. I'm older than you are. That's me. I just want to have meaningful, impactful conversations every day with people. I make it my mission. I have a journal and I have a reminder every day to reach out to at least 3 people every day to tell them that I love them and offer my help to them. And I do that every
day. When did you get the call, Phil? When did you last get the call or the message from him?
Are you on that list? No, he does.
Check your WhatsApp.
Yeah. Last week. This week.
Regularly.
Didn't say I love you, though. I missed. Whoa. You didn't get that memo.
Did you see the love hearts?
There you go.
Do I need to say it?
I don't know.
You sound like my wife now.
Say it with flowers and chocolates.
You know, he said it with love hearts, mate. He said it with love hearts.
Anyway.
I got a Valentine's card from Andy.
No way. You tart, Andy.
I can love more than one man at a time. There's enough of Andy to go around.
That's what they say about blokes from Oldham, mate. That's the theory.
Right, lessons learnt, guys. What have we learnt from this? We've all got to contribute to this, and then we can leave Jason to invest in people's lives. Who's one of us first? You know, what have you learned, Phil, Dave? What's the big thing you've taken from this conversation today with Jason?
I think for me, it's take control and don't have that expectation that this big thing's going to happen. I think that we all, and I totally resonate with that. It's like, it's this perception that at some point in the future, this shit's all going to get worked out and it ain't.
I like that. What about yourself, Dave?
Oh, I appreciate the now. Appreciate the now. Do you know what I mean? Appreciate the now, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I had 3. The one thing that sticks out to me is that, you know, money isn't the issue here. The issue is people just don't visualize it enough or visualize what they want enough, put a plan together and then act on it. That's why she didn't say it exactly in those words, Jason. That's kind of what I'm getting. People without a plan are going to fail anyway because you ain't got a plan. And the other thing that stands out to me is like, don't charge for results. Sorry, charge for results, don't charge for your time. That is so true because people don't buy your time, do they? They buy their results. So I love that. That's what I get from that. Jason, what about you?
That's why prostitution's the oldest business model in the world.
How can you scale that? No, don't answer that question.
Do you know what?
Well, Andy, apparently you can love more than one man at any one time. So yeah, that gives you various opportunities.
Don't be jealous.
I tell you what, though, that's a really good analogy, that. Holy shit, if you ever need clarity, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. Wow.
Jason, what have you got from today's show? What have you learned?
To be honest, I get a lot from just sharing the ramblings of a madman and people listening and bouncing off, and I think it's really, really refreshing. So it's been great to talk to you guys, and I'd love to continue the chat in another episode, to be honest.
We'll do it, like, yeah, we're definitely going to do it. Definitely. We'll sort that.
Definitely.
Dave, make that happen.
Yeah.
Can you make that happen?
Yeah.
I'll get on it, mate. I will work the magic. Yes, indeed.
Wonderful. So final question from me for you, Jason. What you're working on and how can people see the work you do?
I'm always working on sharing things that have worked for me in my life. You can go and listen to my podcast. It's called Always Free. And if you go back to episode one and start there, that would be the most beneficial for you, because I kind of developed that podcast in order for at least the first 20 episodes.
Always Free.
And depending on when this goes out, you may be able to buy my book, or, you know, various events. I don't know when this is being posted. I'm speaking on stage with Stephen Bartlett and Ali Abdul in May, which would be good fun. If you want to come and say hi, I'll see you there.
Where's that at, Jason?
That's at the it's in Wembley somewhere. Wembley, right. Yeah, some exhibition center in Wembley. I can't remember the name.
I'll put that on the show description so everyone can see when Jason's
top lad.
Speaking.
Thank you.
Jason, it's been amazing to meet you. Have you on the
likewise.
Show?
Likewise.
So much wisdom in this conversation. I'm going to have to listen back to it. I don't usually listen to podcasts back again, but I'm going to have to listen to this one again. It's brilliant. Love to have you back on the show. Yeah, I think you're one of us already. In fact, you've enhanced the show in such a way. So very, very grateful. And finally.
Amazing. Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Finally, Dave, talk us out of the show. What do our listeners need to do?
You know the standard ops, guys, standard ops. If you like what you hear, give us a like, give us a share, give us a subscribe. And if you want to get in touch, drop us an email at hello@talkingcod.com. Anything, you know, you want to get on board, you want to suggest anything for topics that we talk about, just let us know.
Amazing. Love you guys. Speak to you soon.
Nice one. All right. Cheers, guys.
Take care.